Friday, December 17th, 2010, and we are interviewing Mr. Andrew Cuomo, former Director of Housing and Urban
Development.
Secretary. Mr. Cuomo, my name's Chris Seifer. I'm with the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. We were established by a statute last year called the Fraud Enforcement and Recovery Act of 2009 that tells us to figure out the various causes of the financial crisis and to deliver a report to Congress and the President by the end of the year, which you may know is now going to be delivered next month instead. That statute tells us to look at various things, including the role of non-traditional mortgage loan securitization and the roles of the GSEs, including their particular failure. So we certainly thought it made sense to talk to the former secretaries of HUD, and you are one of them. So we wanted to talk to you, and thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today. We appreciate it. So with that, let me tell you a couple things and then maybe just ask you to address a general question in the beginning. We know that in July of 1999, HUD announced an increase in the affordable housing goals from, I think, about 42% to 50% over the next several years. And we know that those goals then increased again after you left HUD. We know, second, that during that time and after you left, that the GSEs increased their purchases of quote-unquote risky or non-traditional mortgage loans, and we know, unfortunately, that those loans, particularly ones purchased in 06 and 07 and 08, contributed disproportionately to their losses that resulted in the conservatorship and the money infused into those institutions by the United States government. So I have sort of a couple of generalized questions that I'd ask you to address, please. You know, one, can you describe for us just the circumstances that led to the decision to increase the goals from 42 to 50 that were announced in July of 2009-1? And then second, can you address or describe for us what you know about one, whether, you know, the GSEs were increasing their purchases of, you know, non-traditional riskier type loans while you were assistant secretary or secretary, and two, what the reasons for those increased purchases were, if they were in fact occurring, whether it was for affordable housing goal reasons or other reasons.
Yeah. Okay. First, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you. It's my pleasure. I also think the Commission can actually do a great national service. This is an important question, and it's an important question for the American people and the relevant institutions to understand the facts of this situation, right? You want to learn from the past.
Absolutely.
There has been more political analysis of this and political hyperbole and political myths, you know, God bless the political system in this country. The pundits have all seized on this situation to define and validate their political orientation. What the Commission is doing, I believe, which is so important, is let's have some facts and some data, not political analysis and political rhetoric, right?
Correct.
It's not, you know, facts are still facts, right? Facts are stubborn things. You can have your political theory, that's nice. But facts are better. If you look at the facts of the situation, we raised the affordable housing goals. Why did we raise the affordable housing goals? Because Fannie Freddie were getting billions of dollars in taxpayer subsidies on anyone's schedule. You know, some people said as high as $20 billion, some people said only $6 billion, but it's still billion with a B. Fannie and Freddie were getting tremendous subsidies, and the question was, as a matter of policy, shouldn't Fannie and Freddie be doing something that benefited the nation in exchange for the benefits the nation was giving Fannie Freddie?
Mm-hmm.
That's the theory of the affordable housing goals. The answer is, of course. By the way, you have the Community Reinvestment Act for a normal bank that gets no subsidy, they have to do CRA. Fannie Freddie, the Uber bank, that's getting $1 billion in subsidies, they should do something. That's called the affordable housing goals. Mm-hmm. Right?
Correct.
The the second question is, well, did the affordable housing goals have anything to do with what was going to happen, by the way, 5 years down the road, 6 years down the road, 7 years down the road, with the housing crisis? Absolutely not. The goals that I did, by definition, didn't count high-risk loans. By definition, in the rule. Fannie Freddie couldn't be doing high-risk loans to satisfy the goals because the goals prohibited high-risk loans.
Could you define that? Could you define that a bit in the way high-risk goals were excluded, please?
Well, Chris and Tom, you know, that's defined in the rule, so I'd refer you to the rule, but included in that was an ability to repay, which was a standard, as you know, ahead of its time, really has only been adopted by the regulators in Congress in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I would also point out that Dwight Jaffe, in his report for the commission, makes this same point. And
right.
The reason that affordable housing goals were not a significant factor in Fannie and Freddie's purchase of risky loans is that you couldn't count such loans toward the goals themselves.
Right, and I'm sorry, and just for the record, this is Mr. Glazer speaking, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Tom, how you doing?
Good. Good to talk with you.
So, Jaffe's paper, as I think all of the other independent experts that have looked at this, reaches that same conclusion. That doesn't mean that Fannie and Freddie didn't ultimately make risky purchases, but for reasons other than the affordable housing goals, and you know, that leads us to the discussion of trying to keep up with market share, well documented in your record, that they were chasing unregulated lending by Wall Street, while the regulations by HUD didn't allow them to count those loans in the affordable housing goals.
Yeah, but to me that's the simple point, right? Well, the affordable housing goals caused Fannie and Freddie to buy these risky loans. No, because they didn't count. If Fannie and Freddie bought risky loans, which they wound up buying risky loans, it wasn't for that reason. It was for a different reason, which is Howard said, and I agree with. It was to keep up with the private market share. You look at the loans in 2000, 2003, those loans performed. You don't have to guess. Go look at the performance of those loans. And those loans performed. Those were not the loans that were defaulted.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no connection between the affordable housing goals at that time and what Fannie Freddie was doing. My gratuitous opinion, I don't know about the goals later on. It's not what I did. But, you know, even later on, when they raised the affordable housing goals, I don't know that the raising of the goals didn't happen to be coincident with Fannie and Freddie getting into the business to satisfy Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, later on, you could say, well, when Bush raised the goals, that's when Fannie and Freddie started to buy more of these loans. That may be true chronologically. I don't know that that makes them connected from a causal point of view either. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do, and let me ask you on a follow-up on that. As you noted, and as Mr. Glazer noted, you know, we have seen some documents, and they came out in our hearing last April, that indicated at least part of the reason that Fannie was increasing its purchase of the riskier types of loans in the 04, 05, 06, 07 timeframe was to reverse market share declines to make money, and perhaps in part because of the goals that went up in November of 04 for the years following that. But of course, that time frame is when you're no longer at HUD. And I'm wondering if you have any recollection or can tell us anything about, one, whether Fannie and Freddie were increasing their purchases of riskier loans during the time frame that you were at HUD, and if so, what the reasons for those increased purchases were.
Yeah, good. Let me make one point first, which I'm sure you're aware of, but it's just I want to put it on the table. I'm now the governor-elect of the state of New York. I'm also the attorney general of the state of New York.
Right.
As Attorney General, I just spent 4 years investigating just this, right?
Mm-hmm.
I brought cases in this area. So the topics you're investigating, I spent 4 years investigating also.
Okay.
So I've read all the emails. I've had the rating agencies in here. I've had the appraisal firms in here. I've had the Wall Street bundlers in here, pursuant to subpoena, etc. So my opinion is, you're talking to me as a former HUD secretary. I'm also the attorney general who just spent 4 years doing this with a different hat, right? So my information is coming from both those experiences.
Okay.
All right? I believe what happens is Fannie and Freddie are losing market share. They run to catch up with Wall Street. So the question is, well, when did Wall Street start and why? If you want to trace it all the way back, I believe we actually put a flag in it in 2000 with our predatory lending report, which if you go back and look at that predatory lending report, you will be amazed at how prescient that report was on what turned out to be the problems and the recommendations. Predatory lending is the first step into the meltdown, because predatory lending is you are starting to have the initiation of bad mortgages, which will ultimately be bundled and sold, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you start to see it happening, because we talk about the increase of Wall Street volume. We talk about the increase of Wall Street's initiation, primary mortgage companies, which were funded by Wall Street, that are making loans that were unconscionable, which were traps. The balloon payments, putting people into homes when they weren't going to keep the home on the primary side. And you see the incipient beginning of the crisis. Why was Wall Street doing it? Because they were making money. That's why they were doing it. And they wind up making the bad initial loans. A few years later, they wind up bundling them and selling them. And Fannie Freddie are left out, and Fannie Freddie have to catch up. Why? Because everyone in the world said this was the best business in the world, and it was going to go on forever. This whole equity-based mortgage, you know what the rating agencies basically say when you say to them, how are you rating these AAA? You know what they basically say? They say, can I tell you what they say?
Yes,
I guess. I'm just wondering, from my point of view, it was under oath in this office. But they basically say, to paraphrase without saying what any of the big three in particular said, they basically say there was a new economic model. The value of housing would go up forever. All the projections were for continued appreciation. Once you make that assumption, gentlemen and ladies, you can't make a bad mortgage.
Right.
Why? Because the house value is always going to go up. You always have the security in the house. So there's no such thing as a bad mortgage. Who cares if the lender has a job? The value is in the house. And that's the Kool-Aid that everybody drank. Convenient Kool-Aid, because now you can't make a bad mortgage. You can't, a broker can't make a bad mortgage. Every home sale is a good home sale. And now you have a AAA tranche in a CDO at the back end. Yeah, great, beautiful. Worked for everyone for a period of time until it was the emperor has no clothes and it collapsed. We pointed to that in 2000 with a predatory lending report. Please, I ask you, go back and read the recommendations of that report.
We have read it. I'd like to go back to the housing goals for a minute because we are getting a sense from some people at the GSEs, but also from others, it's almost a mantra of HUD made us do it. And I'm curious if you could define the political relationship between HUD and the GSEs and the ability that HUD had to make the GSEs do something that they were uncomfortable with.
I used to say at the time, HUD as the regulator of Fannie and Freddie was like trying to hold on to an elephant by the tail. It was not a political statement. I didn't mean elephant as an icon for any political party. You have to remember, back then, Fannie and Freddie were all powerful. Right? Mm-hmm. This was before any of this. This was the Fannie and Freddie of Jim Johnson. Right? They owned the town, so to speak. So, and HUD, you know, when I started at HUD, they wanted to eliminate it from existence. So the power dichotomy was striking. And remember, when we did a reg, it went through Congress for approval, etc. We didn't initiate the concept of the affordable housing goals. It had happened before me, before Cisneros.
It's statute.
Yeah, it was a law, right?
Right.
So, and I don't think there was anyone who questioned the concept, because as I said before, Fannie and Freddie, this hybrid beast, but they were getting tax benefits, and they should do something to benefit the nation, and that was affordable housing goals. And by the way, affordable housing goals, affordable means many things. Affordable, these were moderate income loans. These were teachers, these were firefighters, these were municipal employees, these were people with jobs who paid mortgages. These were not subprime, predatory loans at all. At all. There were people, by the way, who at the time, I think GAO made this point, who were saying we were too low because they were already doing that by the market. And our number actually didn't require them to do anything in addition to what they were already doing by their market. Do you know what I'm saying? Because we did not say. We said the opposite. We didn't. High-risk loans don't count. Moderate-income loans, meaning not just top-end loans, right? Because Fannie Freddie left to their own devices. They want to keep going up. They would do all millionaires if they could, right?
Right.
We kept having a fight about the setting of the mortgages because, just from their point of view, understandably, they'd rather do top-end loans. Government, the regulators, were saying you have to do moderate income also. But many people said that we did nothing, that it was already the share of the market because it was a moderate income loan.
Interesting.
Did anyone at the GSEs, I mean, I will tell you we've heard similar things from folks within the GSEs, that as long as the goals were 50% or less, that loans made in the normal course of business were sufficient for them to meet the goals. And I'm wondering if any time that you were assistant or secretary of HUD, that if anyone at Fannie or Freddie ever said words to those effect, or the opposite of, you know, no, loans that we make in the normal course of business are not sufficient for us to meet the goals, and we have to do other things.
Well, look, you don't want to set the goal to what they were doing anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not the point of the goal. The goal isn't supposed to be they run the business to maximize the profit, and there is absolutely no benefit to the country for the billions of dollars in subsidies they're getting, right?
Mm-hmm.
The goal was supposed to be, left to your own devices, you're only going to do the top end of the market. I want you to be doing the moderate end of the market also, and I want you to be working to find good moderate loans. That's what the goals are supposed to do. So they're supposed to be set at a rate that requires Fannie and Freddie to do some marketing for moderate loans.
Right.
We set the goal. When we do it, the critique is, many people say, you didn't set it high enough, because Fannie and Freddie were doing this anyway, just as a full profit-making venture. They were doing this. They're doing absolutely nothing for the taxpayer. Fannie Freddie said, no, you're requiring us to do more than we would normally do. Also, remember, when you talk to the GSEs,
mm-hmm.
their position is, they shouldn't be asked anything by the government. They just exist. And they don't even want to acknowledge the concept that they get subsidies. They don't want to do anything. Just let them operate as private businesses. If you then said, good, then go be a private business and pay tax and pay SEC fees like everybody else. Oh, no. We don't want to do that. Why not? Well, because we're a benefit to the nation. Well, what's the benefit to the nation? And that was a circular argument with the GSEs. And what the goal says statutorily is, yeah, you're a public, you're a private entity, but you're quasi-public. You have to do something for the country, and that's the affordable housing goals.
The number of consumer and housing advocates urged that HUD, in the regulations that you issued, expressly say that predatory lending loans should not be included. Some of them actually urged that subprime loans not be included in counting for the goals. The final rules didn't do that. Did Fannie and Freddie object to those two steps?
The final rule defined the high-cost features and types of features that couldn't be counted toward the goals. What the groups were really saying, and that we agreed with, was that Fannie and Freddie should be prohibited from purchasing loans like that, regardless of whether they counted toward the goals. That was really the push. We agreed with that point, and it's a key point in the 2000 predatory lending report that the governor-elect just referred to. We explicitly called on Congress to enact legislation to prevent Fannie and Freddie from purchasing those loans in the first place, regardless of whether or not they could be counted.
Yeah, guys, see, that to me is the key point. We say in the 2000 report, don't let them buy the loans. Period. And I'll tell you what's really amazing. We make all these recommendations in 2000. They're never adopted. I mean, never. When did it just pass the housing?
Many of them were just passed this last year.
Last year?
This year.
Was this passed the current year?
This year, this summer.
They never passed. The first time anything is passed is 2010. You go look at the recommendations in 2000, you're going to see them in 2000.
Well, what were you hearing from folks about why the recommendations in your 2000 report were not passed, at least during the time that, I guess, in the, at least the year until you left?
Because remember, nobody saw it in 2000. Nobody wanted to see it. And in truth, there wasn't a whiff of smoke. You know, the predatory lending, we did hearings all across the country, but no one really acknowledged at that time, besides us, because we did the report, that this was a real problem. You know, in 2000, these were the advocacy groups, me as the HUD secretary, but nobody acknowledged it really existed.
Also, in terms of the timing, the report was issued in June of 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Congress heading out at this point. It's an election year. There's no time to get legislation done.
Right.
However, we left the full package for the next administration, not knowing whether they'd be Republican or Democratic, with every single issue identified that subsequently became a factor in the financial crisis. I don't think there's anything in there that doesn't become a problem later on as it's adopted by Wall Street. And frankly, if you had addressed the issues in this report, I don't know that you had the financial crisis in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what's interesting. We do the report, Larry Summers and I. Larry Summers is the Treasury Secretary. We think we're going to win the election. That's the Gore-Bush election. By the way, Gore did win the election. He just didn't become president.
Right.
We do the report. We think we're both going to be in our jobs. We would have implemented the recommendations that we just passed. I'm gone. Larry's gone. Summers is gone. We leave the report. Nothing happens. Now, also, guys, well, Congress was asleep. I think we left them the report. We put them on notice. They did nothing. I could argue the administration did nothing after they were handed the report. In fairness, nobody saw it. 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004. Because as AG, we did the investigation. I read all the emails. You didn't have a single short seller. There was not one genius in the world in those years who saw this and was shorting it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even predatory lending at that time, they thought that it was a very small problem in sort of inner city markets with homeowners and a small percentage of unscrupulous mortgage brokers. But they would have dismissed it as a very small boutique issue.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time it was, but it grew. I think it was the first. Anyway, I told you what
I think. We're at the end of our time. If there's anything else that you want to address before we close up.
Well, let me ask one last question, because I did see a quote in a New York Times article attributed to one of our commissioners, so I'd probably be remiss if I didn't ask you about it. And this is in the let me find the first page of this. In the August 23rd, 2010 New York Times article by Helfinger and Powell, and our commissioner Peter Wallison is quoted in the article as saying, quote, "Raising the affordable housing low and moderate income goal to 50% was the key initial step in setting Fannie and Freddie on the path to insolvency," close quote, said Peter Wallison, et cetera, et cetera. I guess I would just ask for your response to that view by Mr. Wallison.
He doesn't have a single fact that would back up what he said. And as a matter of fact, all the facts are the exact opposite. These are facts. This is data. You can look at the loans. You can look at the default rate. You can see when it happened. You can see when the short sellers came into the market. These are facts. I don't care what somebody's political opinion is. I don't care what my political opinion is. These are facts. And I happen to be a Democrat. Even, look, Cuomo raised the affordable housing goals to 50%, whatever his name is, Wallison. Oh, really? Cuomo did it in 2000? Because it was the affordable housing goals? Except the loans that Fannie did at that time didn't have a high default rate. How the heck can it be Cuomo? And if you believe it's the affordable housing goals, you'd really have to blame Bush. Because it's really Martinez. And it's really Jackson, who raised the goals even more. And those loans are the loans that defaulted. The Cisneros loans didn't default. The Cuomo loans didn't default. The Jackson loans defaulted. The Martinez loans defaulted. The Republican loans defaulted. Baloney. Political garbage. And I don't even think it's fair to say it was the Martinez and Jackson loans. Because I don't believe it was tied to the affordable housing goals. I think the question for Martinez Jackson, or anyone, in 2004, 2005, 2006, is, guys, now you started to see smoke. 2004, you're seeing smoke. 2005, you're seeing smoke. 2006, you're seeing flames. Why didn't anyone do anything?
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't anyone do anything? Why did we still go along with this myth that it's all good, it's all good, it's all good? That's a legitimate question.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, I don't believe it was tied to the goals. But, and this is more from my work as AG, you're seeing it and you're smelling it in 04, 05, 06. Short sellers are buying it. The Wall Street guys are talking about it. It's there. Nobody did anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's the question. And was it supposed to be the HUD secretary? Was it supposed to be OCC? Was it supposed to be Treasury? Was it supposed to be the president? I don't know. But nobody did anything. Why? Because the great engine of the American economy was making money at it. And nobody wanted to stand in front of the parade.
Right. Okay. Mr. Cuomo, Mr. Glaser, thank you very much for your time today. We very much appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, people. Thank you.
See you guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.